This is If God Made the Universe, Q&A for session one. Okay, I'm going to start with a question for you guys. First of all, do any of you have any questions? Yes, sir, Tim.
Now
you got to bite a cookie, okay.
You made a comment about there being a critical 20-second period during the first 4 minutes where the size of the universe had to be a certain fine-tuned amount in order to get enough heavy elements, not too many heavy elements. But my understanding is that most of the heavy elements have been generated in subsequent generations of stars, and then there's the universe, right, and then blasted off and the rest of the universe, the rest of the galaxies, by a supernova explosion. So I don't quite understand where that early time comes
in. I'll give you guys a chance to answer it. If not, then Ross and I will try. Anybody have an answer to that? During that almost first 20 seconds, the universe was expanding and fusion was occurring. This is before stars had formed. And Dr. Ross said that heavier elements were being formed. Is he talking about heavy elements, like iron and heavier? Or was he simply talking about elements like heavier than helium?
He was talking about heavier than iron, I'm pretty sure.
No.
His definition of heavy is a lot different than ours.
Yeah. Val, you got an answer to that one?
Well, I took a note and it said if it was more massive, it was too massive, it would be the only heavier than lead and other elements that were heavier. No carbon, no oxygen, no hydrogen, no nitrogen would be formed. So without those four elements, you can't have life. And he said if it was not enough mass, you would get so little fusion, all you would get would be hydrogen and helium.
Okay. Pardon me?
Had lead heavier than all those things.
Yeah, lead is much heavier. Yeah.
So there are two conditions we're talking about.
But Tim's talking about in the very first... there's a 20-second window where it cools enough. What he said was the universe cools enough so that nuclear fusion can take place and some heavier elements are formed. But I think what he said was that the heavier elements are only the first four elements past hydrogen on the periodic chart, which is, I think, helium, beryllium, boron, and lithium.
Right.
Those are the heavier elements.
Yeah, that's what he didn't literally say it, but that's what he meant.
Carbon's the step after that.
Carbon's the next one.
I would just assume with the growing mass, and you got to start somewhere. The growing mass and more pressure from the elements become heavier is how you continue to get heavier elements, which is kind of why we're able to discover new elements, because we're able to find different ways of creating more pressure to make heavier elements.
Right. Dave?
In this video, those few seconds set up what the first stars are going to be like. And if the first stars burn up too quickly and explode too quickly, then you're not going to have what we have, like second-generation stars can make those heavier elements. So, this is a paradox, obviously, that it's not either or. And likewise, obviously, if the elements were different, the stars would have burned too slowly. And so it's the speed, the rate of the burning up of the stars to create all elements is what is critically fine-tuned. And so the early stars had to have the right ratio of hydrogen to helium and those other trace, we call them trace elements, those other elements were very minor, right, that were there at the beginning. And that sets up the speed of the rate of those early stars burn up and create, obviously, the second star. Like we have a third generation star, so we have lots of heavy elements, which is why we have rocky planets. And so if the stars burn at just a slightly different rate, either sooner or faster, you wind up with just like you said, there's a bunch of heavy elements and lots of black holes, or you wind up with lighter elements, no black holes, and either one, you don't have light. And so the chemical makeup of those early stars is a very important fine-tuning element, which is determined by the 20 seconds.
So who here can paraphrase what Hughes' argument is? What he was talking about, how does that relate to God? What does this have to do with what we're here for this morning,
or
this evening?
Small margin of error.
Very small margin of error.
What do we call that? What's another word for that?
Fine-tuning. Very good, Colleen.
So the question for someone who says that this all happened by chance, that there is no God, there is no consciousness that created this, is you have to be able to account for all of those fine-tuning features of the universe, which are more than what he's talked about. There are hundreds. Steve-O.
Scientifically, how do they prove that if it's too big or too small that you're going to have four heavier elements than helium or four lighter elements than helium? I don't know what that is. How do they prove that?
Can anybody answer that?
How do they prove that there's big or that certain amount of balance?
Yeah.
We know the temperature that it takes to make this particular certain elements. He addressed that in the very beginning, that those very supernova eruptions are the only time you have enough heat to make really heavy elements, you know, like uranium. Uranium is only made in a certain type of supernova explosion, because that's where you have the temperature to be able to break elements apart and put them back together. And so we know the temperature that we should make elements.
And that's what math is for. The math that we all don't understand. Yeah,
we can bring some formulas.
Yeah,
you guys want them?
and that's where our tax money goes when we're paying for those particle accelerators, the atom smashers, when they bang those things into each other and they look at what happens. Those are simulating circumstances in close to the Big Bang. So we know the temperature and the pressure, and we can extrapolate from those findings what happened during the first few moments of creation.
And they match the elements that we see in the universe, which is critical for proving this theory.
Right.
Any other questions? Steve-O, right?
I'm going back a long way. When I was in school, I think we had like 101 or 102 elements. Now there's a bazillion.
Well, I think it's 118, yeah.
118. And those are all lighter, correct?
No, they're heavier.
They're heavier.
Yeah.
Generally, they're shorter.
They're heavier, and they last like picoseconds, some of them, you know, very short-lived.
There's a display at the Griffith Observatory now that has all the elements and samples of all the elements.
Yeah.
And all those ones down there are greater than 100 atomic number. There's nothing in the bottle.
Yeah, I wonder why. Mark.
As they look further back, do they map that spectral thing on the lights to see what elements are in the stars that are further away versus the ones that are closer? Because if I understand it right, the further away the star is, back its point in creation is.
That's right.
So do they have anything like that where they...
Yeah, they can do spectral analysis of the light that comes out of the stars. And in that spectral analysis, you can tell what elements make up that particular star.
So do the elements of the farther out stars, are they lighter or heavier?
Well, the further back you go, the older they are.
They are, so
right.
So
you have.
I think it would be lighter.
I thought it would be lighter.
Yeah, because remember, as you get to newer and newer stars, you're going to have a second and third generation stars by then.
So
that's when you make the heavier stars.
That's a lot of the helium.
Yeah, as we're looking further out, we're looking further back in time.
Yeah.
Does everybody understand that?
Yeah.
Is anybody struggling with that idea that the further back, the further away you look, the further back in time you're looking? Does everybody sort of have a grasp on that?
Yeah. Okay. I think the help on that one is the number of this number is 186,000 miles per second. That's the speed of light, 186,000 miles.
So when they say we're looking back just a short 1 billion light years, since the universe has been shown to be 13.7 billion light years, if they're only going back 1 billion, that is literally a billion years ago, or the distance light would have traveled in a billion years. And yeah, those are relatively old stars that you'd be seeing.
Most of them are dead.
Well, right now, so if you look at a star that's a billion light years away, you're seeing what it looked like a billion years ago. So right now, it doesn't look like that. It's not in that position. And what he was saying is that the real universe that exists right now is he's used the number 10, 100, and 1,000 in different places. But it's somewhere between 10 and 1,000 times bigger than what we can see. Because what we can see is not is a past representation of what's really out there.
Ross is getting into something even more complex now. I cannot understand, I admit it. Maybe some of you can. What was it called, Ross? Let me see. Difference between observable and actual universe. And you know, it gets more confusing.
What page is that?
In the text, it's on page 30.
Well, I think I thought of a good analogy.
Go ahead, Ross, please.
Let's say it's 15 minutes until church starts, okay? And this room is church. And you're sitting in this room. And you've been here starting an hour before church starts, up until about 15 minutes before church starts. And you're counting the number of people that are coming in and sitting down, okay? But at 15 minutes before church starts, you've got to report to somebody what the attendance is, and they're a 15-minute walk away. So you get up and you walk for 15 minutes and you go tell that person, this is how many people were in the room when I left. But it took you 15 minutes to get there, okay? So are there going to be more people in there than when you left? Hopefully. And if people...
Unless they left.
Unless they left, yeah. But if people are coming in at a regular rate, you can then extrapolate how many people are there now, even though it took you 15 minutes to get to where you had to go to report it. So that's the same thing. These stars are... In this case, it's a lot more than 15 minutes. It takes 8 minutes just for the light from the sun to get to us. Imagine how long it takes light from distant stars to get to us. Thousands, millions, billions of years. Can you wrap your head around that a little bit? Okay.
I can.
Are you ready for the philosophical questions that we were primed with? Or? Okay. I'll go with number one here. What does the vastness of the universe, for humanity's sake, tell you about God's love for you? What does the vastness of the universe, for humanity's sake, tell you about God's love for you? And how about some? Can we hear from someone else? Anybody else?
That's not on the...
No, you don't have it. We have it. And so I get to surprise you.
You've got to wing it, Susan.
And, you know, just think about it for a minute. Want me to read it again? Is everybody...
Yeah.
Okay, one more. What does the vastness of the universe, for humanity's sake, tell you about God's love for you?
He created it large enough to support us on Earth.
And okay, he did. That's the baseline. So how did he? Go ahead, Andy.
It's kind of like how you phrased John 3:16. It took all this. For like an unfathomable, pretty much, amount of space and mass and time and everything, just to give us this tiny, invisible speck and things to live on in the life we have right now, and it kind of shows how great His love is for us that He would do that.
You know, if we're anything like Him, we might think of something we want to do, and then we have to go from that point back to where you are and start working it out. So you can do it. And that sounds like it would have taken trillions of whatevers for him to think out. But maybe not. Maybe it was instant. I mean, it's pretty amazing. It's really something.
Anybody else have a thought? Ruth?
He's so extremely detailed in forming the whole universe. He's exactly extremely detailed in what we do in our lives. He's in the details of our lives. Even when we're picking the clothes out of our closet, He's there with us. He's there for every little thing. When we're eating, He's there. I mean, if He's going to be that detailed in the big picture, why not in the small picture?
Uh-huh. And that's a very logical connection. If he's that detailed in all of that other stuff, He's going to be aware of everything that's going on. It makes sense.
He knew you before you were ever born.
Yes.
So, I mean, that was very minuscule compared to creating the universe.
Right.
Maybe it was before he created the universe.
I think so.
He must have had it planned, huh? Before he even... God created time and space.
What he was going to do first.
Mm-hmm.
What he was going to do second.
Well, you kind of had to know all this stuff in advance, because how could the fine-tuning have come up the way it has for all of these 160 parameters of science or whatever, that some of which didn't even show up until much later, unless he had planned that all around mm-hmm. or was tweaking it along the way, which means he changed the laws of physics on the fly, which we don't believe did.
Well, we know they didn't change since time began, 13.7 billion years ago. What went on before time? Did God... who's outside of time.
We'll never know. Let's all be honest. I'll
tell you my personal theory, and then you guys can argue with me. I think there's something in the Bible that says that God does not change.
Mm-hmm.
If you are not subject to time, then you will not change, because time implies at one moment you learn something, the next moment you're different. God isn't that way. So I think that there was no, if you want to, for lack of a better word, there was no time in the history of God that he wasn't fully aware of everything that was going to happen and how it was all going to play out. And I would even go further in that, think of human history, think of the history of the universe almost as a recording. You know, and God had this recording and he can play it at any moment he wants. He can go backwards, forwards, freeze frame, reach in and deal with any one individual pretty much at any time in his history. I think he's always been fully aware of it. So when people say, what did he do between the time he created the universe and he waited 13 billion years until human beings came around, and we have this image of God, you know, like waiting. And I just think that's a complete fallacy. I think he's not subject to the timeline that we're subject to.
We're trying to force God into our four-dimensional world.
Yeah. And
that's right.
Not in that four-dimensional world at all.
That's right.
That's all we can conceive of. But
yeah, we don't have any other way. We can just barely sort of conceive of how it could be different.
Yeah,
exactly. Dave?
From the pictures I had, when you talked about obviously this thing about the universe having to be the right mass, the right temperature and everything, the right elements and stuff, it was interesting. The first picture that I came into my mind, obviously, is talking about temperature and time are things that are critical in the kitchen. And so I think about how my wife, you know, will make homemade chocolate dessert things. And if you are cookers, you know that to do chocolate things, you have to heat up the chocolate to exactly a particular temperature. If you go beyond it or below it, it messes it up to the granular, or it doesn't come out correctly or whatever. It has to be exact. And of course, how long she heats it up, it depends upon the mass of the chocolate she has, right? You know, she's got a little chocolate, she's got to turn on and walk out of the room. You know, she's got a big pot, you know, okay, she can come out and come up a little bit, obviously, and that fine-tuning. And it's like making chocolate on steroids, obviously, that for the universe, that you talked about, so you have to be exactly right, you know, it took the preciseness to make the chocolate that we all love. The same precision for the universe, we never would have perfect chocolate. And so I have a picture of God then, obviously, that knows that we're going to enjoy the planet completely. He's there with care, you know, making sure that it's the right mass, the right temperature, the right time, so that we have something to enjoy later. My chocolate analogy helps me to appreciate what God put into the universe because he loves it.
So God fine-tuned the universe so that chocolate could exist.
Yeah.
And we want some chocolate, Dave. Dave, next week, chocolate. Doug, did you have a comment? I saw you raise your hand, I thought. No? Okay. Mark, yeah?
This made me wonder about heaven in this dimension, or is it outside the fourth?
Another realm. Another dimension.
Outside, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when you die and you're so close to heaven or
mm-hmm.
that is, there's a lot of different theories there. But at that point, are you going to outside this? I'm just wondering, because what we're talking about here.
You know, I think the second or third chapter in the text, if you happen to get it, Dr. Ross talks about time. And he has a drawing in there of, you know, our single dimension of time that we live in, and it's only one directional. But then he shows how God can have other timelines, and they cross that one dimension, and that's why he can listen to a billion or more prayers at once. And so that's when he's using time. You know, in heaven, maybe there isn't even, he doesn't even have to use such a thing as time at times.
He's never talking about heaven being outside this physical universe until this point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yes, Ruth. Ruth, go ahead.
Every time we talk about universe, I always keep thinking God preparing mansions for us. God's preparing, just like He pre-prepared, you know, the earth for us. And all that vastness, you know, all these other people say, oh, what's He going to do with all this vastness? Well, that could be for our future mansion. You know, you can't put a limit on God, and you can't put a limit on our mansions. And who's to say that each galaxy could be ours? You know, we don't know, but we can have that creativity to say, hey, why not? God can do whatever He wants.
Yeah, I would have to say that, I mean, all these discussions that we have, and obviously this has been something that's been racking theologians' minds for millennia, is that we keep trying to make the idea of heaven, to make the idea of this universe, to make all of it something tangible that we can understand, because I think as humans we're so uncomfortable with the fact that we couldn't understand something, that we're always looking for a way to explain it on our terms. Mm-hmm. And I think in the end we just won't. You know, when it comes to heaven, if that's something you find out when you meet your maker. It's like we like to, you know, like he puts it in ways to help us try to understand it when he speaks about it. Yeah. When Jesus talked to us about it with regards to mansions. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we can envision and kind of wrap our brains around, because I think
you're right. It's beyond our sensory abilities. Now, who in the Bible visited heaven?
Paul.
Someone said Paul. Was it Jamie? What did he see?
John.
And what? And remember, you talked about first, second, and third heavens, I believe.
Was that
John?
Was it John or Paul? No, Paul did too.
Yeah, John
Paul did too.
Revelation.
Yeah. So there's more than one, but what did they describe it at all?
Oh yeah, they did.
What did I remember? Paul. Anybody remember what he said?
They could, you know, what Revelation, end of Revelation.
That was John, then. Yeah.
Yeah, talking about this New Jerusalem being what 1,300 miles on the side.
Yeah.
Wide and long and tall. And certain characteristics, tree of life in the river, and those kinds of things.
So we got a little description.
It's not metaphorical, I'm sure, but still characteristics that have familiar analogies to what we're using.
As best as he could, huh?
Yeah.
And he may, remember, just like Andy said, you know, he may have been describing it in human terms that aren't correct.
And you talk about the actual materials that were, the gates were made of and whatnot, he can only say, okay, this precious stone on earth is the closest thing I can.
Clear gold or whatever. Yeah.
Clear, transparent gold idea.
And what did Paul say? He couldn't even begin to describe it.
They didn't even have the word.
No, he said, I can't tell you.
And to that extent, it's kind of like, I mean, if you ask everyone in this room to say, think of a dog. And if you projected all our pictures of the dogs that we're thinking of, they're probably not the same dog. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it's just, our minds are just trying to wrap around it. And when you hear about these, like, fire, I mean, like, the way he described it, and someone drew it.
Yeah, I think that little story I told about the timelines that you're going to see in chapter 2 or 3, he admits that's a frail way of saying what time may be like for God. Cause it's just something that we humans thought up, you know, how God may have more than one timeline and they cross each other, and, you know, that's why I can listen to many prayers and so on. But we're guessing.
It would be like, you know, a good analogy would be like, you know, someone from the Stone Age describing a spaceship. He wouldn't even have the context in his head of how to think about it, and he would probably be describing it in terms of animals he knows, and this part looks like an elephant's foot, and this part looks like some, you know, something else. There's no way he can describe what he's seeing.
Yeah, but I have also
something like that with the modern day helicopter.
Yeah, yeah, that's some of the prophecy guys. Yeah, they say that that you know, some of John's descriptions in the Revelation are more related to our contemporary machines. Mm-hmm. You know, like that part in the Revelation that talks about these grasshopper-looking things coming out of that pit. Yeah. And some of the prophecy guys today will say, no, those are really helicopters that he's talking about. And others disagree, of course. But that, you know, John couldn't describe it, even something like that.
Well, I think that one of the key points about what Hugh is doing is providing mathematical models that could be the way God doing it. And by virtue of the fact that those mathematical models show something that could explain how God is doing certain things that he's doing. Not that that's the way he's doing it, but the fact that you can develop a model that could be possible means it is possible for God to do these things. We don't worry too much about what it really looks like. We rack our brains with that. We just get down to the brass tacks of the math and the physics and say, we can show that it's possible and let it go.
Very good. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Mark, did you have one?
Revelation chapter 4. Because you
described
the new heaven,
the
new creation,
but
that's new.
But it's still a heaven.
But for us, the throne of God in heaven, and you know, you got the sea of glass being described there, lightning, yeah. 24 elders.
The four beasts.
It's hard to understand how much that's symbolism for us to understand what it is.
Or it's just that's the best he could describe it, but it's really something entirely more complex or advanced or.
Yeah,
strange.
It depends on your interpretation of Revelation.
Yeah.
He is only a man.
Dave?
I was just interested in this video. Something that used to a lot in class. It was interesting. It wasn't in the video because he was talking about the mass universe. Is the fine tuning of that mass. But there was the analogy that you used that if you took away one dime of mass from the universe, by the way, you take one dime of the outer Earth, at that time it wasn't present when he created the universe.
Right.
Now, does that relate to the analogy of stacks of dimes?
No.
Yeah, that was distant.
Different stacks of dimes.
God's stacking a stack of dimes.
You should have used nickels or something. Pennies.
Well, I mean, I mean, you do say that the dime was at that point at the beginning if you took it away. But if you took it away now,
it makes so much. Good point, Mark. Yeah, it was in the beginning. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But some of it's being converted into energy and vice versa. Right.
Steve-o?
That is the twice as tall as the Sears Tower and besides the South America.
Yes. That's
how many stars there are in the observable universe that we can see.
Susan?
What verse?
Are you
50 billion trillion.
50 with 21 zeros behind it.
Yeah.
Or 50 with 10 to, with 20, to the 21 power. Okay, Susan.
I like thinking about the fact that God knew we'd be here tonight.
Yeah. He's here right now.
And he delights in us. And he probably really gets great joy out of watching this all being figured out.
Yeah, he's quite chuckling. Like, they think they know it.
Yeah.
Wait till they find out. Yeah.
Because he wanted man. He wanted to put man on us.
Yeah. And he wants us to think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He really wants us to struggle with this.
He gave us that mind. That curious mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He wanted to give us a mind. He also gave us a place and a time. Mm-hmm. Our galaxy and our planet is different. We can observe this, you know, and also respond. As you talked about
exactly.
Later and sooner,
yeah.
You wouldn't see as much. And also most stars, you know, in places where you either have know, dust in the way, or too bright of stars, and so there's a very dark star also to enjoy, which is pretty amazing.
Ruth, did you have another comment?
I like what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 2:9. What no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor the heart of man imagined, what God has prepared for those who love Him, these things God has revealed to us through the Spirit.
Wow.
Has revealed. Mm-hmm. So you say, if it's revealing through the Spirit, yes, He will show us all that.
What, in what manner do you think He's showing it to us? I mean, because we don't know all the answers, you know.
Whatever the Word of God, you know, whatever the Spirit shows us through the Word of God. We can go through the Book of Nature and the Book of Revelation here. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can't make up after that, but you take it from the inspired Word of God or nature, and the Holy Spirit will reveal to us. And we can't say, the Spirit's not going to make mistakes. I mean, we can in our interpretation, but we rely on the Spirit. Mm-hmm. Well, God is in the truth.
Yeah. David, you want to...
It's funny, when I read that verse, what I think obviously is how the book of Romans, you talk about turning your heart, that just everybody knows there's more than this. There's going to be a judgment day, and mm-hmm. the Spirit within us. You know, he talks about even these atheists he talks to. You know, it's not that they just don't think there is a God. They're really against Him. They know that there's a God. They know there's mm-hmm. a judgment day. It's just that they're angry at Him. It's not that they don't think this God is there.
We're born with some kind of
innate
knowledge and feeling that there is God, and we have it right for some period in our life, and then as we mature, something else happens. We get distracted and arrogant. And so
it's really what their argument is, if you think about it, because God doesn't show Himself physically. If you don't like what He does, you can just say, people who are atheists, the way I think about it is, they're really just saying to God, I don't like the way you're doing things, so I'm just going to pretend you don't exist.
Or change you.
Yeah.
Make up new religions.
Sometimes it's that they don't want to submit.
Right. Yeah. Well, so I'm going to pretend you don't exist. Yeah. Lee?
I can't help but thinking, when we talk about this, these people's arrogance, drowning in their ignorance, mm-hmm. think that if God doesn't do it my way, He doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's what I'm... Yeah.
It's so proud.
It baffles me.
You don't like this universe. Let me see you design a better one.
Yeah.
Let me hear from Doug here.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Doug.
When you start, you see the comments from the regarding the new atheism.
Yeah, the new atheism. Yeah.
The people are involved in, or they're, you get the feeling that their argument is based on their own perception. And it's only limited to their own perception, and therefore it's only constricted to their own thinking, that there's, as much as they probably want to say they think outside the box, they are limited in what their perspective is, because God is much bigger than that. Mm-hmm. And they're saying the universe is so expansive. Well, whose conclusion that the universe is really, you know, is too expansive?
Mm-hmm.
Who's to say it's too big? Who's to say it's too small? Or, you know, what you know, that's just their conclusion. But what would be the right time?
You know, one of the problems that you should bring up, we missed the Q&A. We couldn't get it to work. But there's a question. Remember Paul wrote mm-hmm. a question about that, and that is, these guys that write the books, the new atheists, you know, they're really hostile. If you've seen any of them, they're much more than the old atheists used to do. But they got their information. Most of them are so specialized in their particular little field. Hugh answered that question. He said, they're too specialized and they don't get outside of their field at all. So they come up with these books. And they even contradict each other, because, you know, one guy's a biologist and the other's a physicist, and they're, you know, they're both atheists, but so they don't have it together very well in their books, and that's one of the problems. And there's many others. Jocelyn.
A couple things. You mentioned that we have space-time. What are the four dimensions that we have? A time, space, height.
Time, height, width, and length.
And space, yeah. And just from my own perspective, and I'd like to know what some of these other dimensions are, but for me to try to imagine what the other dimensions, another dimension would be gravity. You can't see or touch or feel gravity, because that's going to be said that that's another dimension that you can't judge.
Anybody want to answer that about gravity? Or you go ahead and finish your comment.
That's one question, and the question number two is, how do you describe these other dimensions that we can't get our hands on again? I've actually tried to look for it on the internet, but I'd like to know what.
Who wants to talk about gravity and whether or not it's a dimension? Go ahead, Ken.
Gravity is not a dimension. It's actually a kind of perturbation in our own dimension. That's what Einstein's contribution to gravity was above Isaac Newton's, is showing that it exists within our three dimensions and is simply a perturbation or bending of our
space-time.
To try to imagine other dimensions is really not possible. Mm-hmm. You cannot do that. You can make analogies and say the easiest way to do that is imagine what a two-dimensional universe would be like, and then what a view of a three-dimensional person looking on a two-dimensional universe that has two-dimensional life forms in it, how that perspective would change, and use that to extend the thinking process. But you cannot act physically observe it. What you can do is create mathematical models, and those work beautifully. The math holds together very well and provides good descriptions for phenomena we see that gives us confidence to say, yes, those other dimensions exist.
Gravity is simply just the effects of this Earth being so big that it has pull. Just things that have mass have gravity. Gravity is just an effect.
Yeah. No. It would be like light. You know, you can't say light is another dimension. It's an effect that's going on within our dimension. So that's a good analogy you guys came up with. Okay. No, you can't. I mean, heaven is probably some other dimension or dimensions. We can get a little bit of a handle on that. But, you know, you've all heard of the string theory. I'm just going to barely go on this. String theory is a theory to try to predict how all the forces and everything comes together in nature, but in physics. And they can show mathematically that there's, I think, six other dimensions, besides those four you mentioned, six other dimensions that are we don't see, and they're wrapped up so small, they were only active during the first few microseconds of the universe's existence. Now they're all wrapped up and somewhere, but we can't. I mean, how can you?
How is it known that they exist?
Mathematically, just what Tim said, that you can prove it with mathematics.
Mathematics is just an abstract concept, is a tool for being able to use to describe things, and it's not. It's helpful in visualizing things, but we cannot do that visualization in our own minds of those things that we have not been able to observe. So the mathematics comes out, we have confidence that the mathematics works. If the mathematics describes reality as we see it, including having to go to additional dimensions of space in order to get consistency within our dimensions, then we believe that that really happens.
And I want to bring up something else, too.
Can I tell the story?
Yeah, we want to hear Flat.
This might be a good analogy.
Why don't you come up here, Dave, and do it? You want to come up here and do it?
It's hard to hear you. Come on up. People help us. Yeah. I'll give it a mic. So you like this. Come on, you like the mic.
He likes to tell about Mr. and Mrs. Flat, because he's exactly correct. We can't view extra dimensions. So like I said, obviously if our universe has nine dimensions, and that means God has to have dimensions beyond that, and we can't visualize it. It's impossible. And so Hugh says that typically to help you with extra dimensions will take you down a dimension. So he introduces everybody to Mrs. and Mrs. Flat. And so he would take out a piece of paper, and this piece of paper, if you look at the edge, is just a single line. Right? And so this is Mr. and Mrs. Flat. If they look each other this way, they're going to see each other like we would see each other now. But if one turns sideways, all they would see is a line, right? Because they have no width. And so this is Mr. and Mrs. Flat.
They never get fat.
And they never get fat. Great. So so he makes these as outdoors people that are living out in a cabin in the wilderness. And Mrs. Flat is home cooking. And she's praying and praying and saying, you know, I wish that God would reveal himself to him. And so God answers her prayer. He comes down and he's a three-dimensional being, right? It's just we're taking God down. He's obviously multiple dimensions, but for the sake of representation, he's a three-dimensional. So he comes down and he puts one finger into the kitchen of Mrs. Flat and reveals himself. And so what does she see? Since obviously it's only one finger, she can only see what? A circle. That's it. She can't see. It's a circle. He's just putting a finger through there. If I put a finger here and I slice my finger there, it's going to be a circle, one circle.
She's
going to see a line. Yeah. She's going to see one line then, okay? One line, the width of the finger, right? One line is the width of the finger. Mr. Flat is out chopping wood in the forest, and he prays and asks God to reveal himself to him also. So he's having a spiritual experience that day too. God answers that prayer and comes down and reveals himself. But this time he actually just happens to put three fingers into Mr. Flat's world, and Mr. Flat sees three lines. And so Mr. Flat comes home from his woodwork, and his wife says, oh, it was miraculous. I was praying today, and God revealed himself to me, and God is one line. Mr. Flat says, no, I was out praying in the forest today, and I asked God to reveal it to me, and he miraculously appeared to me, and he's three lines, you know. And they start arguing about whether God is one line or three lines, and she goes out and, you know, makes a church of one line, and he goes out and makes a church of three lines, you know. And so that is a representation of, obviously, of extra dimensions, you know. We use that also to describe the Trinity. How can God be three and one at one time? Well, obviously, if he has extra dimensions, he has no problems being, you know, three persons and one essence at the same time. And we have a difficult time, you know, comprehending that because we obviously are limited by our dimensions. So that's Mr. and Mrs. Flat.
Very good.
Excellent.
Okay. Why don't we get on to the next question? Ross, do you have it there? We actually have about four or five questions for you, but you guys can interrupt with your own at any moment. You know?
Yeah, and I want to say something else, too. So.
Okay, go for it.
Well, how many people saw the movie Contact?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jodie Foster asked the question, if this is all there is, isn't it a big waste or something like that? And it sort of is one of the new atheists, which are really old atheist arguments, but one of the new atheist arguments. At the beginning of the DVD. What can anybody identify in that statement? If this is all there is, meaning planet Earth is the only planet that's in the universe that's supporting life, then everything else, it's all such a waste. What's the fallacy in that?
It's not a waste if it's for us. It's so finely tuned the rest of the world.
Go ahead, Jamie, go ahead.
It couldn't be a waste if it had to be there for us to be here in the first place.
Right. But there's another.
What was she implying by that? That there's other intelligent beings throughout.
Right.
She was saying we aren't the only ones.
We're talking about Jodie Foster's statement.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of being fallacy in that.
Yeah, and that's true. But I'm focusing on the. I want to focus on the word waste.
Yeah.
What does waste imply?
Unnecessary.
What else?
Throw away.
What else?
There's aliens. That it was made for many different.
What else? Keep going.
Unimportant.
There's the way I see it is the word waste implies that there is a limit to how much there can be. Okay, if someone says we are wasting the resources of this planet, the implication is that there's only a certain amount to go around.
Yeah.
But we're talking about God. God is all powerful. How can there be a waste of anything if he has an unlimited supply to start with? And that's the answer to a lot of atheist arguments like that. And I'll give you an analogy. Let's say you had a printing press and you could literally print all the money that you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Whatever you wanted to buy, you could buy it. The whole idea of, let's say you have this printing press. No one could ever accuse you of wasting your money.
Yeah, because if I go out and buy a huge yacht, it was a $10 million yacht, the greatest yacht ever,
And people will say, wow, what a waste. And I'll be like, do I have any less money?
Exactly.
No.
Exactly.
Isn't this how the federal government operates?
That's it. Right. So the implication in those statements is that God had a limited supply of what of whatever it is. And the answer to that statement is he has no limit. So how can it be wasteful? So, you know, I've heard that a lot from atheist friends. This is a waste. Why did he do all of that? Why is there 13.7 billion years between creation and the creation of man? Isn't that a waste? Well, God operates on a timeline where it's meaningless.
That's part of, you know, the 13 billion years, 13.7, part of his creative action. And he doesn't care about time, does he? We already discussed that.
Right.
If it's 13 billion years to us, what is that to him? You know, as long as he gets to do what he wants to create, his creative nature, and it comes out the way he wants it. So to us, it seems a waste of time, you know.
Because we're thinking in terms of a finite supply.
Of our four dimensions.
Right.
Two.
We're thinking in terms of, you know, 1,000 years or 100 years is a great amount of time.
Right.
But to him, it's just, I mean, it's, you know, speck. It's not even, you know, grains of sand.
Dave?
You know, when I go back from the first time I even read Genesis as one adult, it was interesting. I got the concept of long periods of time, because after each day he would pause and say it is good. And I got the picture of like an artist painting a picture. You know, he paints a little bit, stop, stand back, and look
says,
at it.
Good job.
What he created so far, and say, yeah, that's really good. And then go back and paint some more, stand back, look at it for a while, and say, yeah, that's good. I mean, Genesis 1 has no hint of any haste there. If anything, it shows a God that was impatient and enjoying what he was creating. And of course, when the painting's all done, his ground creation, you know, being mankind, it was really good. I put it all together and it's all good. You know, it's the way I want it to be. It's all great.
Mark, did you want to say
something? I was getting back on that waste. There's nothing that God made in his eyes waste. I think that because he gets to the detail where he knows the number of hairs on our head, and he cares for the sparrow in the field, there is nothing that he's created. We might call it waste because of what we perceive things, but there is nothing. There's not one particle in the universe that he created that he considers waste.
You just hit it. There's not one particle in the universe. When you come down to it, remember how we talked about if you took a dime out, it would disrupt everything, you know, and elements wouldn't form. It's actually far less than a dime. And it's a particle. It's like an electron. If one electron were taken out during the creation period, we wouldn't be here. The stars wouldn't have formed right. There wouldn't be enough, or there'd be too much carbon, and so on and so on. So that one particle comment is very well taken.
Excuse me. All right.
Can we go to the second question?
No, go ahead.
What
I was just thinking of my family, both my Christians, but they have no appreciation for God in the same way that I do, just from coming to this class. You know, and I've been here for 10 years or more, mm-hmm. and I can't repeat much of what I've heard.
You mean the paradoxes class, right? Yeah.
Just because of all that I've seen about what God has done through you, it's absolutely amazing. And I just wish.
You know, I want to say something personal, sort of a continuation about what you're saying. I've been coming to, for those of you who don't know, this is sort of an extension of Paradox class, which is a class in this church that meets in this room at 11:15 every Sunday. But I've been coming to that class for over 10 years, and I've been a Christian my whole life, but this class gave me a rational foundation for my faith that I didn't have. But for a lot of years, it stopped there. I knew there was a God. I knew He loved me. I knew this all made sense for the first time. But it was in my head. And I think for the last few years, really for the first time in my life, you know, I can read that verse, Ruth, that you read. And it touches me personally. And I think there's a great temptation listening to Hugh talk and appreciating the creation that he gave us, and the temptation is to stop there and let it stick in your head. And what I want to say is, let it go to your heart. Let this say something to you about God, and let it make a difference in your relationship to Him.
Thanks, Ross.
Everything you do, Norma, today is very humble. And you could tell when somebody's truly walking with God. Their every being is in humility.
Well, yeah, you know, when I start to get arrogant and prideful, like everybody does, I start asking myself questions like, you know, did I have anything to do with where I was born or who I was born to, or the opportunities that I've had, or the circumstances that God has given me? You can ask those questions. You can ask 50 of those questions, and you can't answer yes to any of them. I can't take much credit at all for where I am or who I am or the gifts that the Lord gave me, or that I exist in the first place. So that's where the humility comes in for me. Okay, second question we have.
We may have already answered it, you know. Well, go ahead and read it.
Well, it's sort of what we're talking about. What does the vastness of the universe tell you about the one to whom you pray? It's a good question, though. What characteristics, what can you deduce about the personality, not the characteristics of God, like omnipotence and power, and we know all those things. Does God have a personality? What can we deduce about His personality from His creation?
Grandiose.
He's meticulous. What else? Oh, thank you. I'm glad somebody said that. I think God has the greatest sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Just look at the human body, you know?
Or
the goofy animals He designed. Yeah. What else? What does it say about it, who God is? What does the creation say about Him?
Long-suffering. He will judge someday, too.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the nice, sweet side and the other side. So we know that.
And the generosity. I mean, He created this huge universe for our benefit. You know, He's blessing us immensely with resources that are far beyond anything we can do anything physically with. We can simply just appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And He didn't have to do all that for our benefit as far as we're concerned.
So make the word generous more personal.
That seems pretty personal.
Is that an act? I would say generosity is an act of love.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
He loves us.
I think it all comes down to He loves us. You can reduce all of them to that.
The
but
love.
What's that?
The love.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They got to be really lucky. There's so many things that are.
He's provided for everything that we need, and not only, you know, like clothing and food and things like that, but all that time, so that things would be there when we came on the field.
Makes you wonder, did God have to draw from some kind of a pool, you know, to make this universe? The Bible says He just spoke us into existence, right?
Mm-hmm.
But did He have to? Was it that easy? I mean, we talked earlier about how He must have planned it some, and you know, how because it took all this time. Did He have to draw from any resources or from Himself to do it? There's no way to know, of course.
Yeah, so seventh day He rested.
What are you, yeah. Jamie, you've got something. You look like you're ready to say something.
It seems to me that if He planned it, then He would have had to not know it at some point.
Right.
So I don't know whether He planned it or not. He's a really smart person.
He's so smart.
It's inconceivable.
Yeah.
He's inconceivable.
He said He's really smart.
He said He
didn't
have to know us,
also. Theologians discussed that term of what He knew when He created, and it's a big issue in Presbyterian and Reformed Presbyterian views.
Is that a free will?
Yeah.
The whole free will predestination debate is wonderful. Yeah.
But We cannot, in my opinion, I mean, I don't care which side you come down on that argument, if anybody knows the argument, you can never know the depth of God. That's what the Bible tells us. You can't know the depth of His love. You can never know the depth of His knowledge. He is deeper than we can ever. We can never get to the end of,
you know,
what He is.
That's really interesting, because one of the things I see in all the atheist arguments are, underneath it all, it's almost like they're all saying, if God really exists, He should make sense to me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
In my way.
And He would do things the way I would do things.
And in my time.
That's right.
And God's like, no, I created time, I'm out of time, but I'm going to give you time to prepare for what I'm going to give you as a gift. If He said yes to every prayer we said, we would not appreciate it, and we would just throw it away.
I see Bruce Almighty.
Yeah. You know, one of
the 17 million people won the lotto.
That's right.
There you go.
One of the things Hugh says that made so much sense to me when I heard him say it was that all the other holy books of other religions describe God in very human terms. The Bible describes God in terms of us not being able to understand Him. So isn't it, imagine this just from a philosophical standpoint. If there is a God who created the universe and is powerful and smart enough to do all this stuff, wouldn't there necessarily be things about Him which we could not understand? Which we cannot describe, which we cannot quantify. So Christianity is the one religion that has a God that looks like that.
Well, that's all consistent with this extra dimensions idea that God can create as many dimensions as He wants to. Well, if He is beyond space and time, then obviously He's going to have characteristics that are representative of those dimensions that are outside of space and time, which by definition we cannot understand.
So Jesus can walk through walls and God can appear in a burning bush and weird things can happen, and for God it's just normal behavior.
You know, Ross, we only have about 5 more minutes, so why don't we skip to the last question? Because you get to read something out of the Bible there. So, want me to do it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, somebody grab a Bible. Or I've got one there, Valerie. And look up Ephesians 2:10. And here's the question. Can you recall an instant when God had prepared some good work in advance for you to do? Something you could not have orchestrated on your own? That's something like predestination, or, but let Valerie read that. You find Ephesians?
Yeah.
2:10.
For we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do.
Okay. In advance. So the question is, can you recall an instant when God had prepared some good work in advance for you to do? Something you could not have orchestrated on your own. Now, Hugh has often asked us about that in the Paradoxes class, but he leaves it more to remember back when you were almost killed or almost died from something. Can you think of how God got involved? Remember what Hugh does? Am I stating that right, Ross? Yeah. And Susan?
This isn't the answer you're looking for, but certainly prayer. I mean, prompting us to pray and finding out any time from 1 minute to 2 weeks later why we were praying. Sometimes we never know, but...
Answering, when you find your prayers are answered, for instance?
No, not my prayer, but...
Anybody.
Praying for somebody.
Yeah.
I had a deep, you know, need to pray for that person.
Yeah. I think that touches on the answer here.
Yeah.
Dave Sargent.
The other one that you would couple with that would be divine appointments. You talked about pretty often. Divine appointments. You know, where you meet somebody and you talk to them.
And he gives us an example almost every week. I was on the airplane, sitting there by myself, and this atheist physicist sat next to me, saw me reading this, and by the time we landed, he never said I got him converted, but he said, he was, oh, how do I get your books, you know, and so on. And it's just so many times Hugh Ross has gone through this. It's like a magnet.
Favorite part is when Hugh comes back from trip. Can't wait to hear what happened on that.
Yeah, we're all just, our jaws drop, you know.
You know, God's going to do
it. His encouragement to me is that if you pray for those divine appointments, you'll have I lived in Germany for 6 months with my company, and I was at a train station at 2 o'clock in the morning waiting for my next train about 20 minutes to my connection. And the Lord just told me to go over. There were only about 5 men and gentlemen in the train station. And the Lord was just compelling me to tell me I had to go over and talk to this one guy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lord tells you to do something, you know, yeah, I got to do it. I'm going to feel so bad. You know, I walked over there and just, you know, you speak English, you know. And I thought the Lord wanted to witness to the guy, but it turned out that it was the man who attended the church that I was attending, you know, which was saying like 10 years before. And actually, we had a great conversation talking about the church and the church.
Okay.
Pray for divine appointments.
Yeah. Anybody else think of anything? Yeah, Ruth?
And the law of attraction, Dr. Canal Surya said there's no such thing as law of attraction. That's like something that someone made up. It's called divine appointment. I just figured out right now that there's too many people, there's a lot of books out there with this new age thing of law of attraction. And if it's not proven, you know, we should say, no, this is God, God's appointment. God's attracting two people together as divine appointments.
Mm-hmm. This law of attraction, talking about personal relationships, is that what it means?
I don't know the term.
Commenting on the secret, you were talking about.
That's what it is, the secret, and how there's different things in the physical world that can attract two people together, but according to Dr. Kanathriya, and I asked him personally, he goes, that has never been proven. He's asked for proof.
You know, Ruth, I'm thinking, I think we're all Christians in here. I mean, most of you have that look, at least. Exactly. And and you're really attentive. And you all bowed your head when we prayed and all. But don't you think God, you know, he uses us to get around non-believers, too. I mean, we're supposed to witness in some way or another. And they look at our lives and how we live. They watch us. And so there might be a lot more of that going on. And we realize, you know, how we're being, you know, careening around, just touching and talking to people, which, of course, tells us how careful we have to be, you know, and be good examples. And, mm-hmm. There may be a lot more of that going on. Mark, I know you want to say something.
I just believe that every moment of the day, everything you're learning is preparing you for a moment that God has prepared you.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know when that's going to come to its fulfillment. I mean, I just think of the career paths I take and the people I've run into. And if I hadn't took to a career path, I wouldn't have had those opportunities. Mm-hmm. But I think God took me on that career path. It wasn't me. I think I'm doing it, but it's God actually doing it. He's bringing people into our lives at the perfect moment for all the knowledge we have that he wants us to pass on about him.
So we shouldn't resist him, should we?
Also, all the pruning that is happening with us.
Talk a little louder, Norma.
All the pruning,
mm-hmm.
all the pain. There's a purpose there.
Yeah.
There's a reason.
Like growth for us, mm-hmm. spiritual growth.
You should know that firsthand.
Yeah. I think we all have been through plenty in our lives, enough to know that God is directing us, and at times he lets us go through tribulation because we need to grow. And Paul even said to welcome it. You know, that's hard to do. But. Well, they told me we should leave by no later than about 15 till, and it's that time now. I think if you have something burning to say, just stay after. But Ross is going to lead us in a closing prayer. And
can I just ask a question?
Go ahead.
Do you want me to bring some recording from
time
or not?
We're recording it, aren't we?
No, the audio. Copies.
Why don't you check it out and see if it worked first of all?
Yeah.
And I know Don wanted one at least, right?
So we could all mini and have side computers.
Yeah, we can put it on the website.
Put it on the website.
Yeah,
for people to download it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a paradox.
It's been a very good conversation. I mean, people want to hear it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you can hear whatever you said. And,
the website Dave's, we're talking about is.
Pardon me?
The website we're talking about.
On the bulletin board.
They're there on the top of the bulletin board.
Paradoxes.org.
.org. Dave, we've never put anything like this on that site, but Rich can. Okay, it may take more than 1 week to get the first one on there, but you know we'll get it on there. And so.
The last thing on this handout, second page, is a link to the article, "The New Atheism Phenomenon." Where's the link to that?
It didn't come out, you know, because it's.
It was in blue.
It was in blue. Yeah, you just have to type it in literally, you know.
But is that...
That one, no, you cannot... Wait, let me think for a second. That might be on the... Yeah, I know, I'm trying to think on the web. Go to the... Yeah. It should be at the reasons.org site.
Mark, I think this came off of the If God Made the Universe, which is online...
For you, but the student one doesn't have everything the leader one has. But as far as I know, you can go to either one. Go in there and explore both the student website and the leader.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
Just do a Google search on If God Made the Universe, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes with this DVD
right.
and the book. And I think that's where this is and the link.
Yeah, if you open this page, then you just click on the blue part. So.
So the website we were given in the first place, the ifgodmadeuniverse.com, was mentioned.
I'm sorry, I said org, didn't I? Sorry.
Yeah.
Then you should be able to find this.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, let me know if you guys can get into the leaders one. I'm pretty sure you can. And, you know, there's just more stuff so, for you to look at.
All right, well, let's close in prayer. Lord God, we're so grateful and so humbled to learn all this stuff about the universe that you created meticulously and carefully and joyfully for us. And we don't even know how to return our gratitude and our thanks enough. We thank you for your love and your patience and your faithfulness to us when we don't deserve it so much of the time. We thank you for this class. Thank you that tonight has been such a blessing for me. And I ask, Lord, that you bless each one in this class as we go our way this evening. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you all. Hope to see you next week, same time.